Hey everybody, I'm Scott. It's fundraising time again at antiwar.com. We need your help, and here's how you can help. Stop by antiwar.com/donate or call Angela Keaton, our development director, at 323-512-7095. That's 323-512-7095, or you can shoot her an email over to akeaton@antiwar.com.
Thank you very much for your support.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest on the show is Tim Cavanaugh. He's a Reason columnist and Hit and Run contributor. That's their blog there at Reason.com. And he was the online editor of the LA Times, and he's written for, I don't know, just about every newspaper in the world or something, looks like here on the page. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Great, Scott. Thanks to be here, and good to be back.
Yeah.
I guess we're honoring a solemn 2-year anniversary, right?
I don't know so much honoring it as just trying to recall it and the importance of it. This is a real problem that we face. Is that where in the heck is the Black Sea anyway? I don't. You know what I mean? People
have no idea where
former Soviet Georgia is, and they certainly. If they're anything like me, and I already know about it, I still can't figure out why it's any of my business or why I should care at all what's going on in former Soviet Georgia, but I guess it has something to do with the fact that my government is involved over there. What is the deal? Why? What do people need to know about Georgia? Where is it, really? Where is the Black Sea or whatever? And then why is it that it's of concern to people who live in L.A. or Texas or New Hampshire or wherever they're listening to this today?
Well, it's probably of less concern than it used to be, and not only because it has been relatively quiet there. We're talking about, if you haven't mentioned this on the show already, and we're talking about 2 years ago, there was a 5-day war between Georgia and Russia over a breakaway region within Georgia. It's called South Ossetia. It factored fairly importantly in the presidential election at the time. It was certainly a big reassertion of power by Vladimir Putin, who's now the prime minister and, de facto supreme leader of Russia. And so that happened in August of 2008. Ever since then, South Ossetia has been either occupied or protected, according to which side you're on, by Russian troops. And the Georgians have, managed to move on. The wrinkle in 2008 was that Mikhail Saakashvili, the president of Georgia and still the president of Georgia, was a fairly good friend of John McCain's. They knew each other personally, and they also shared a common friend in Randy Scheuneman, who was the head flack at a PR firm called Orion Strategies. And as you can imagine, Georgia is it's the birthplace of Stalin. It's a lot smaller than Russia, you probably guessed, and Russia obviously handed them their asses in this war, although the Georgian army had been recently refitted and retrained by the United States, and we had a case of, actual American weaponry and tactics going up against old-school Russian-style tactics, and the Russians came out on top. The Georgian army was not, as spirited or cohesive, I believe, as people expected it to be. And that's basically the situation we have right now.
Okay, so you got tiny little Georgia and even tinier little South Ossetia, which is basically like an autonomous breakaway sort of province that, people can debate going back over history as to whether it, quote unquote, belongs to Georgia or not or whatever. But it was nominally part of Georgia and yet de facto independent, protected by Russian peacekeepers. Then the Georgians tried to take it back and, violently, and doing so had to, of course, bomb Russian troops who were the NATO-approved, right, peacekeepers. Under the deal that had been made in Ossetia. So then the Russians came over the mountains and under the mountains and pushed the Georgians back out. But they didn't conquer Georgia, right? They just pushed them back out of Ossetia and maybe pushed the line a little bit further. But it seemed to me like what was happening on the ground there hardly measured up to the rhetoric coming out of the Obama and McCain campaigns. Well, especially McCain first, but then Obama played catch up. And the rest of the news was that, you know, Russia has attacked a tiny, helpless little state. This is like the time that Hitler rolled into Czechoslovakia.
And especially for those of us who grew up on the great tales of Russian, depredation on the East Germans when they conquered them in, World War II, it was just a pretty and subsequent, very credible stories of really hellacious Russian behavior in Chechnya and, of course, in Afghanistan back in the day. By comparison with those, you'd have to say this was a pretty professional Russian army that rolled into South Ossetia and into parts of Georgia from which it subsequently withdrew partly. And, as always in these cases, the two sides differ on how complete their withdrawal from what was previously recognized as actual Georgian territory, not, under dispute. It's war. Bad stuff happens on all times. People commit crimes on both sides all the time in war. So, I'm not going to say they were nice guys or anything, but there was no, concerted effort to prey upon the Georgians when they came in. I would not say there was an organized from top to bottom effort to prey on the South Ossetians by the Georgians in the few days when they had the upper hand. However, there were some very serious abuses that continue to be looked at by Amnesty International and the UN and so forth. Specifically, there was one road, which was really the only civilian road out of town, and everybody who tried to get out of there with their families got blasted by Georgian troops as they were trying to get out. But, it went fairly well as these things go. And the Russians have been fairly scrupulous in, sticking to where they are. There's stuff all the time. I mean, every day there's some shooting incident, somebody gets killed. It may have been dying down in, recent months, but that continued for a long time after the official hostilities ended. Didn't mean to go on about that, so.
No, that's fine. And now back to the media thing a little bit here. If we can rewind it back to 2 years ago, how we are at antiwar.com. We're digging through the news all over the world all day. And so in the middle of the night when the stories first started breaking, all the truth came out. Georgia invades Ossetia. Russians retaliate, et cetera, like this was how the story broke. Everybody knew that. And yet in the New York Times and the Washington Post and therefore, TV and everybody else in the American media, the consensus was that at the very least, no one is to challenge John McCain when he asserts that Russia simply aggressively invaded this helpless little nation, which was the way that he phrased it. And there was even a very awkward kind of thing going on the stage in one of the debates hosted by Tom Brokaw, where John McCain says, yeah, Russia started it, and Barack Obama goes along with it. And you can see that there's kind of this awkward, like, eye contact where they're all kind of telling each other silently, okay, so we're going to just go ahead and pretend that that's the truth for the sake of this argument. Okay, fine. It's just ridiculous. And then it was like the end of November. The New York Times wrote a piece called, oh, yeah, I guess we were lying to you the whole time about what happened there.
Yeah. I was actually part of walking back that story, and Randy Scheuneman was hired by the Georgians to represent their interests and pretty effectively put the kind of story out that you just mentioned. And there was a little bit of controversy. I mean, a lot of this is ancient history, but it's not totally clear that when Scheuneman was working for the Georgians. And I mean, when you do this, even as a FLAC, you got to register with the Justice Department as an agent of a foreign government. It's not that serious, but it's actual official stuff. He was a paid Orion Strategies, his PR firm, was a paid client of the Georgians out there to get the word out that Georgia's our friend and, here, put the pro-Georgian side out. I ended up doing not for the state of Ossetia, which is, you know, this sort of, as you mentioned, a you know, fairly not totally credible tiny state that has declared its independence now and been recognized by Russia and maybe a few other marginal countries. But I was not representing that government. Was representing some individuals in Ossetia trying to get their point across.
All right, now hold it right there. We'll get back to your disclaimer when we get back from this break. Everybody's
Sorry.
No. It's fine. It's good. We'll be right back with Tim Kavanaugh after this, y'all.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
All right, y'all. A little bit of poison idea for the LRN listeners and a lot of poison idea for the chaos crew out there. I am Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio, and I'm talking with Tim Kavanaugh from Reason Magazine. And, Tim, you were explaining how you were actually hired by some private South Ossetians to help get the truth out in the face of the American Empire's media narrative at the time during the Georgia-Russia war of 2 years ago.
That is correct. The person we were working for was a private individual in South Ossetia who, had, you know, a legitimate, concern that, maybe that their side wasn't being represented. And, you know, in order to get, it was a hard narrative to walk back because you mentioned a little while ago that initially Obama made some, and this was then Senator Barack Obama, candidate for president, made, you know, some fairly lukewarm comments on the thing, and McCain immediately called him out for, you know, his lack of patriotism.
Right.
And, you know, it's sort of weird because it's your lack of patriotism in the defense of some other country. You know, Obama did sort of, you know, he went along, as he did during the campaign, came out with some fairly heavy anti-Russian comments and, you know, very pro-Georgian type stuff. There the narrative rested for, you know, several months in the United States. And it is true that the United States was, you know, way behind the rest of the world in terms of, you know, its view. I don't want to say behind, but it was not on the same page with much of the rest of the world in view on what had happened. And it took a lot of digging. There was a British Army captain who was with the multinational peacekeeping force in Georgia, Ossetia, to, you know, come forward with his own testimony about what had happened that really, you know, blew apart the Georgian narrative. And, you know, the Georgians are very good. It's not just Randy Scheuneman. They're good on their own. They're Western-trained. They have a lot of – Saakashvili has, you know, if you go and hang out with his cabinet, you will feel like you're in the arms of a bunch of college good old boys from, you know, Cleveland or something. And, you know, so they were real good at presenting their side of the story. They had done a ton of wiretapping. They had a lot of evidence to, you know, to create this narrative that they had, that Saakashvili realized the Russians were coming in and the South Ossetians were shooting at him, so he had to react and go after the Ossetians. None of that was true, and all of it has been subsequently smashed by all of the timelines, everything that anybody could put together. All of the evidence is that the Russians were actually very slow. I mean, it was about 36 hours, I believe, between when the Georgians rolled across the border. And this is a small area. I mean, they're tiny little countries. If I were a hack at the New York Times, I would say that's the size of Connecticut. I'm not sure what it's the size of, but it's a pretty small area. Between the time that the Georgians roll into South Ossetia and the Russians come through what is called the Roki Tunnel, which separates South Ossetia from Russia proper, it was about a day to a day and a half before the Russians really got there in force and were able to kick the Georgians back out. So that was a narrative that you had to walk back, that the Russians had been the aggressors. And we successfully did that, but as you noted, it took till November 7th, I mean, I believe is when that story came out in the New York Times. Unfortunately, in this case, and I'm sorry if I sounded disparaging about the New York Times a minute ago, because it was like night and day. We were getting this, you know, we were getting our side of the story into papers all over the country, into media, on the web, everything else. When the New York Times story came out, it was like night and day. Suddenly, Saakashvili could not get his phone calls returned. Everybody was paying attention to the, you know, the Ossetian side of the story. I don't want to go overboard on how, you know, important South Ossetia is. I don't know that it is viable as a country. There's another breakaway country, Abkhazia, which is not quite next door, but next door with a little bit of Georgia in between it, and that does have a coast on the Black Sea, which, as you noted, no one on the earth knows where the Black Sea is. And thank God we're not talking about the Caspian Sea, because we'd all be lost for good. But Abkhazia actually, I would say, has a little bit of viability as an independent country. Ossetia, probably less so. But, you know, 2 years on, Russia's official policy has not been to annex them, to absorb them into Russia or anything like that. It's to continue to act as if Ossetia is a separate country. Mm-hmm. A couple days ago, Saakashvili was referred to it as occupied territory that had to be liberated. So, you know, he does not have Barack Obama's ear the way he had John McCain's ear, though. So his position is far. Plus, his army has been totally smashed, and I don't know, has really been rebuilt since. So he really hasn't got a leg to stand on, although he seems to be surviving politically in Georgia.
Well, there's a few things there. I think I want to go back to Randy Scheuneman. This is, I don't know exactly. I think I remember people saying he's a biographical neoconservative type, but I don't really know that for sure. But he was, you say he was a lobbyist for the Georgian government, and he was an advisor to John McCain at the same time.
Please don't say I said that.
Okay.
It is not clear that he had cut all of his ties with one before doing the other.
Oh, okay.
There is no smoking gun where you can point at his records and say, here, you were definitely working for the Georgians when you were also, and he was on McCain, he was a senior policy advisor to the McCain campaign. Mm-hmm. As with everything in the McCain campaign, he came to a bad end. I believe there's some controversy between him and Michael Goldfarb about whether Michael Goldfarb might be on his side, but there's some controversy between him and others at the McCain campaign about whether he was fired or just had his BlackBerry taken away or something. But he, you know, McCain ended up sort of walking away from Scheuneman at the end, too.
Mm-hmm.
Scheuneman, I don't want to put anybody into a box, but I think you were not totally off base in saying that he has, you know, basically a neocon profile.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm really interested in, because I know there was some, you know, at least rumor of this or whatever. I don't know if anybody ever nailed it down, but the suggestion was that the McCain campaign and or perhaps the Cheney faction in the White House or something were in contact with Saakashvili before this thing and encouraged him and told him, don't worry, we'll back you up, or led him to believe that or something. Can you nail down any of that?
No, and I believe that then-Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's visit to Georgia a few weeks before did not contribute to this problem. I mean, I actually think Saakashvili is an unstable figure politically unstable. He was caught on film chewing his tie at the height of this crisis. So I don't want to, you know, say too much by that. I think he's just a loose cannon politically. Sounds like the show's wrapping up, so I'll wrap it myself and
okay.
Just say...
Well, actually, I was going to ask you, is it okay if I keep you 10 more minutes? Or
sure,
do you
sure,
need
sure.
to go?
Because
there's
yeah.
a lot more here. It's pretty important stuff, actually.
Okay, so, yeah, I'm happy to hang out.
Okay, great. Everybody, it's Tim Cavanaugh from Reason Magazine. We'll be right back.
Shop at Amazon.LRN.FM, and a portion of Amazon's profits benefit the Liberty Radio Network. Amazon.LRN.FM.
All right, y'all, welcome back. Anti-War Radio. talking with Tim Kavanaugh from Reason Magazine. Thanks for staying over this extra segment with me here to go over this war.
No sweat, Scott. Good to be here.
You like doing revisionist history here on Anti-War Radio? Because what they say happened in real time is always a lie. So the closest to truth we can get, you know, we've got to try to revise. Now, here's the thing that I don't know. This may be actually my favorite news story I've ever read, Tim, now that I think about it. A new book suggests Vice President Dick Cheney pushed for the U.S. to engage militarily with Russia. When Russia invaded, this is even in the Ross Stories version, invaded the U.S. allied Georgian Republic in 2008, Ronald Asmus's A Little War That Shook the World says that in August 2008, as the South Ossetia War between Russia and Georgia was raging, the White House looked at the possibility of taking military action to prevent Georgian forces from being routed by Russian troops. And it says in here, Cheney appears to have been the most vocal proponent of the idea of engaging in the South Ossetia conflict. And they talk about the bombardment with missiles of and the sealing of the Roki Tunnel, it's called. This is the tunnel under the Caucasus Mountains that the Russian troops were pouring through. This guy really wanted to get us into a full-fledged war with Russia on some tiny little border dispute in the Caucasus Mountains between two seas that Americans can't find on a map. I mean, you think that's true? Could it really be that the wisdom and patience of George W. Bush saved us from Dick Cheney getting us into a war with the Russians?
You know, I always have had a secret sort of personal liking of George W. Bush, so I hope so. But, you know, and I hope that this was going to be the war where Cheney was actually going to suit up and, you know, hit the front line himself.
Yeah.
You know, it would not surprise me if Cheney made the, you know, intellectual argument for engaging Russia over this. I mean, they had so many other things that they're trying to line Russia up and against Iran and all sorts of other stuff that it's a little hard to imagine that anybody actually seriously considered this. Of course, you know, they're running scenarios all the time about how we can fight everybody on Earth. And as you know, as you know, somebody who follows this stuff and, you know, follows, you know, I don't want to say neocons, but maybe contemporary mainstream big government conservatism, you know, there is a large section of our population that thinks the problem is there are still some countries we haven't gone to war with.
Yep. Well, and Russia, the guys that have, you know, 3,000 to our 5,000 hydrogen bombs that could erase our entire society and maybe all of mankind off the face of the earth if we picked the wrong fight.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I would have, you know, it always sort of tickles my imagination, too. I'm sure it tickles Dick Cheney's, too. It's like, would it be possible to get into a limited engagement with the Russians? Like, yeah, everybody agrees we're going to keep the nukes in the silos. We're going to fight it out at some local level. And, you know, it would probably be pretty, in fact, we'd be
what
in trouble
fun
if it didn't go pretty quickly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying, what fun. Just imagine these kooks in their situation room playing their game.
Sure, yeah, yeah. You know, I don't think that was ever seriously considered, but there's, you know, it's of enough concern. What was the name of that book, by the way? I want to make sure I get a copy of it.
I know. That's what I was thinking, too. Why didn't I get this book immediately when it came out? A Little War That Shook the World by Ronald Asmus. There's a Raw story about it. Cheney pushed for military conflict with Russia. And it says in here, basically, that Stephen Hadley said, Mr. President, don't listen to him. And Bush said, okay.
Yeah, yeah, no. Good old Stephen Hadley.
Yeah, yeah, right. We can all rely on him to
take
care of good business for us. Wow.
Yeah, but, you know, it's concerning enough that we had this, you know, close relationship with a guy who is, you know, a little bit out there politically, that he thought he could kind of take on the Russians and win. And wasn't even smart about doing it. I mean, you mentioned the Roki Tunnel. One of the, if Sakish, you know, this may be an argument that he's feckless and just sort of fell into the situation rather than planning it ahead of time. But one way or another, it doesn't make him look good. They should have blown up the Roki Tunnel immediately. The Georgians should have sealed South Ossetia off and had their way with South Ossetia before the Russians would be able to get there, because it's a very mountainous region. This tunnel's the only way in. You have a lot of heavy vehicles that you're trying to get in, tanks and so forth. So if they had sealed that tunnel off, it would have taken a long time for the Russians to get, fully armed there. And by then, the Georgians might have had a situation that the Russians couldn't just dislodge them from. So
does that mean that Shakashvili just kind of decided this in the middle of the night or something and didn't plan it out well? Or
his actions indicate that he had given this speech, and it's very, maybe it reads a little better in the original Georgian or something, but he had given a speech on TV that night, the night before the shooting started, that said, I love the Ossetian people. We're going to find peace no matter what. And, everybody went to bed thinking, okay, well, then, there's the Georgian president coming for peace, so we can all relax a little bit. And then the Georgians started shooting. And as you noted, killed a couple of Russian peacekeepers in their beds, probably, for all I know, at their posts. And it is not clear that he had any kind of good game plan. And if I were whoever the military advisor was who went in and got them up to speed, there was a lot of funny clips on YouTube, if you want to check them out, of the Russians conquering Georgian barracks. The Russians, everybody's got a camera now, so all these Russian soldiers are walking through this Georgian barracks. They're like, look at this place. It's totally nice. It's like an air-conditioned barracks. They got beds. Everybody's got a separate closing door. It's like way better than anything we have. All of that stuff came from the United States and came from the Americans getting them up to speed with American weapons, American-style uniforms, everything. And
Reports, Tim, that there were actually even American special forces on the ground, perhaps there for training anyway, who I wish I had all my footnotes here, but I'm sure you heard that there were reports that there were engagements actually with American soldiers on the ground.
Unconfirmed. If you've got friends or relatives in the service, you will know that a lot of stuff happens that nobody ever hears about.
Right.
But, it's unconfirmed that Americans ever engaged the Russians. It's, I believe, not disputed that there were Americans there. There were American military advisors there, and that they were moved away pretty quickly. They went in the opposite direction of the fighting on American orders. So not sure, and it's a chaotic situation. Certainly if a guy is there, in uniform and he's got a weapon and somebody's shooting, he's going to shoot back. So I don't know. It is possible that there was some engagement, but there's not any evidence for that, just, situational stuff.
Okay, so now fast-forwarding back up to the present time, Hillary Clinton still talks a little bit about bringing Georgia and Ukraine into NATO. Are they still serious about that? Because I thought they'd backed off.
I believe that's all for Saakashvili's consumption. I don't think there may be some seriousness about bringing Ukraine into NATO. And again, we've established many times nobody knows where any of these places are. Geographically, Ukraine makes a little more sense as part of NATO. And I am not philosophically against NATO. I mean, I don't think NATO should exist in the first place, but as long as it's there, I'm not totally opposed to this idea that if Russia's neighbors are afraid of Russia, they have a right to do what they want, and Russia should not be able to veto that.
The real question is, are you willing to give up L.A. for them?
Well, that is the question, right? And NATO is part of making that promise, and it's not clear that NATO should exist at all in a post-Cold War world. But, these are guys, Scheunemann's one of them, who believe that there is still a Cold War going on, and Russia is still a great power threat to us, and that we need to be pushing them back every chance we get.
All right.
These guys have an infinite number of people that have to be pushed back, though. So I don't know how many of them you can alienate.
Right. Yeah. Especially before we go bankrupt like the Soviets did, trying to do the same thing. All right. Well, listen, I really appreciate your time on the show today, Tim. It was good.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
Everybody, that's Tim Kavanaugh from Reason Magazine. And we'll be right back after some of this.